All right, so good afternoon. My name is Dave Wickert. I am a program manager with the analysis services team. We're the folks that bring you Power Pivot analysis services, the new VertiPack tabular engine that is in SQL Server 2012. But our conversation today is Power Pivot for SharePoint. I'll save my story for a little bit. Okay, so this is the overall objective for this course. Hopefully everybody, as I said, got to the right place. What are we going to talk about? So first of all, just a fair warning right up front. This is a 400 level course. It's kind of unusual to have a management and administration course be a 400-level presentation. When I was asked about it, I was asked how we should level it. I thought, given the complexity of all the moving parts that we're going to talk about, everything from SharePoint timer jobs to all kinds of stuff, I thought it was appropriate for it to be a 400-level course. I don't think you have to have a programming course to have something be a 400-level course. One of the things you will find with Power Pivot is that a lot of the troubleshooting and debugging that you will do really comes back to first principles analysis over what the architecture is and why is it happening and what's the component that's causing the problem. When you see a pop-up dialog box that says unable to delegate credentials, to understand A, that is a SharePoint issue, B, that is a Excel services issue, and C, happens before any Power Pivot component is invoked, I think really requires a certain level of understanding that really makes it a 400-level course. So hopefully I won't bore you. Hopefully I won't lose you. Hold on to your seat because it's an interesting presentation. What I would like you to walk away from is enough of an appreciation of the architecture so that when issues do come up that you will have enough of the fundamentals to be able to adequately debug and work with the system, that we'll spend a fair amount of time with setup and understanding why in 2012 we made a radical change in the way setup works, why we did that and how that relates to the overall architecture, I think is an interesting discussion. The only feedback that I would give is these lights are incredibly bright. I'm lucky if I can see you folks at all. So if you have a question, don't just raise your hand. Speak up because I can't see you. If you were to raise your hand. So with that, why don't we go ahead and get started? Okay, we'll start on the easy side. So how many people here know what Power Pivot is? Please just raise your hand if you're in a 400-level course on Power Pivot. Okay. How many people understand the distinction between Power Pivot for Excel and Power Pivot for SharePoint? Okay. How many people are running Power Pivot for SharePoint in their shop? Why are the other people here if you didn't raise your hand?
We're thinking about it.
You're thinking about it. Okay. This course will definitely scare you, so yeah. Okay. So let's position the product. So Power Pivot is actually two products. There's Power Pivot for Excel and Power Pivot for SharePoint. Power Pivot for Excel is a version of the VertiPack, what we now call VertiPack. At the time, it was just analysis services, the in-memory database product, that is running in Excel. So Power Pivot for Excel, literally the analysis services engine, is running inside the Excel process. It is in memory, it is in process with Excel. If you're comfortable at all with analysis services local cubes, it's similar technology not exactly the same, but the actual interfaces and the way which we load is very similar to the way local cubes work in analysis services. But it is the full VertiPac engine running in power pivot mode. That being said, it lives in the Excel world, which means that it's single user. It means that it is tailored to the data set sizes that a single user would load. Its performance characteristics are for a single user. All bets change when we get into PowerPivot for SharePoint. PowerPivot for SharePoint is the bridge technology between the single user product that exists inside Excel and the collaborative world of SharePoint. So PowerPivot for SharePoint is all about how to bring similar functionality that PowerPivot for Excel has in a shared collaborative environment. And that at the core of it is what it's all about. Is how do we provide the and how do we leverage the collaborative environment that SharePoint already provides in the PowerPivot world. Many of the things that you get with PowerPivot for SharePoint are really SharePoint. So for example, the best example I like to give is data refresh. So in PowerPivot, you can get an email message that says your nightly or weekly data refresh, scheduled refresh, worked. How do you suppose that happens? That happens because you use standard SharePoint functionality. You set up a SharePoint alert on the document library where the workbook lives. You get the email message. How do you, with PowerPivot, one of the things you'd like to be able to do when somebody comes up with a new calculation, how do you find out that the new version of the workbook, the new calculation, has been done? There's an alert set up on the document library where the workbook lives. The fact that PowerPivot embeds the analysis services database, when you import the data, it's part of the document. There's literally a backup of the analysis services database that was done in that in-process version of PowerPivot for Excel, is embedded in the PowerPivot, in the workbook, in the Excel workbook. An Excel workbook is a zip file. You can take any workbook and rename it to a .zip, take the XLSX file extension and change it to a .zip file extension, and Windows Explorer can navigate inside the workbook. And you will see in a folder inside that workbook, in a folder called Custom Data, you will see an analysis, you will see a file called Item Data. And if you restore that to an ABF file, you can take that ABF file to Analysis Services and restore it, because it is a backup of an analysis services database. How did that happen? That happened because you use SharePoint functionality. You want to have an approval workflow for this new workbook that calculates salary information. And you'd like to be able to have managers inside your work group approve that calculation in that workbook that that person created with PowerPivot for Excel. How do you do that? You do that with a SharePoint workflow extension. The fact that the data is the workbook, the data is in the workbook, means that anything that you can do in SharePoint, you can leverage in a PowerPivot world. That's what I'm driving at. My most favorite feature in PowerPivot is SharePoint, because we automatically piggyback on top of virtually everything that is available in SharePoint by having by living inside the SharePoint world. And so we'll talk about the extra functionality that PowerPivot gives you. There is other functionality in it, but it's not my favorite. My favorite functionality is it's just SharePoint. And the fact that the data set is in the workbook just does all kinds of things, very, very cool things. Now, it also means that there are things that we get feature requests all the time. An analysis services person will come to me and they'll say, we want dynamic security, we want perspectives, we want all of these analysis services features. And I say, but you would want that on a workbook? There is a disconnect here. And the disconnect is to recognize that the data is in the workbook. And the data is the workbook. We called this, it was actually, we actually came up with a cool name for this called document-centric data. This notion that an IW, an information worker, is very comfortable with saving documents and working with documents and workflows and things like that, that we wanted to do that in a Power Pivot world. Now, as real-time IT people, you say, but wait a minute, I want real-time access to data. I want to be able to refresh the data every 5 minutes and have users see the data. And my response to that is, well, that's great. That's an analysis services application. Take the data and put it in analysis services. It's not Power Pivot for SharePoint. Power Pivot for SharePoint is a document-centric product. And it uses SharePoint. And we're leveraging the SharePoint capability. So that's enough of the soapbox. All right. So what is this extra functionality that Power Pivot brings to the table? One is the browser interactivity, which means that it is just SharePoint, which means that the SharePoint gives you, Excel Services gives you high quality, high rendering fidelity between Excel on the desktop and Excel in SharePoint, so that you can have this workbook that your IW user spent an exorbitant amount of time. I don't know if you've ever sat with Excel jockeys, but these folks will spend days and days and days in getting their colors right on their workbook. I mean, it is amazing what these people can do with Excel. They can make Excel jump through all kinds of hoops. The notion that they can take all of that time and effort that they put into a workbook that's sitting on their desktop and just copy it up to SharePoint and render it inside a browser without requiring the desktop product is a very cool feature. And Power Pivot just leverages on top of that because we want that experience to be there in the browser. Now, it's not the full experience. You don't get the design service. You get pivot tables that can be rendered and you can click on slicers and interact with the system, but you don't get the design surface. So you don't get the field list. You can't change the model. So it's not full fidelity from a feature perspective, but from a rendering perspective, how people would use the workbook, not the designers, but how the consumer will consume the workbook. It is very rich functionality, and that's part of what we bring to the table. The other thing that we bring to the table is scheduled data refresh. Now, I don't know if you guys recognize this, but this has been on the feature list in Excel for years and years and years and years and years. That in Excel, the only way which they can refresh the data is to copy it down onto the desktop, do a refresh on the desktop, and then copy it up to the workbook. And when you're on the desktop, you really don't have data refresh at all. What you have is a setting that you can set on the workbook so that every 5 minutes it refreshes itself. And that's the Excel notion of scheduled data refresh. The fact that you could take a workbook and say, on the third Tuesday of the month, I want this workbook to be refreshed, where Power Pivot for SharePoint gives you a component that on the third Tuesday of the month, we pull the workbook out of the document library. We pull the embedded database out of the document. We send analysis services process commands to the embedded database, which then reaches out to the data source, pulls in the new data source. We then put the database back in the workbook. We take the workbook and put it back into SharePoint. The user comes in at 8 o'clock in the morning and they see their new workbook. That's like magic to these folks. I mean, it seems trivial to us as IT people, but to the Excel, so they don't have that capability. So you guys can bitch and complain that you want every 5 minute updates of the workbook, but I'm telling you, for an Excel user, the fact that we can give them daily updates for their workbook, they think that's great. Because it's something that they don't have and something they've wanted for years, and they just can't do it except through Power Pivot. We have a feature called the Management Dashboard. So there's a trade-off in the system. When you buy into the SharePoint world, you give control as an IT pro. How many people are IT in the IT? Okay. Now, if you're an end user, slowly raise your hand on the other side. Acknowledge. See, nobody's raising their hand. We're all IT here. Okay, so I'll tell you the real deal. So, in SharePoint, the notion is that end users get to do what you guys do, but they get to do it themselves. You know, IT people like approval workflows. They want approval. In the SharePoint world, the users do that. Maybe the IT people help them by enforcing an approval workflow or something like that. But that's really core end user capabilities and features. And in the Power Pivot for SharePoint world, we expect the end users to do that. That's part of the power that we give them. What we give you guys is visibility into what they're doing that they don't know that you have. So behind the scenes, when they're opening up a workbook, we detect what the data sources are that are in the workbook, and we, over in our management dashboard, collect all the data sources behind their back. So if you wanted to write a compliance requirement that all of your workbooks have to use only particular legal data sources, you can do that. Now, I don't encourage that, because as soon as your end users find out that you're looking at them, you know, all bets are off, but the capability is there. Every query that they execute, the query response information is put into our management dashboard so that you can see whether or not users are getting particular what their query patterns are. You can see whether, you know, you can see where their workbooks are that are being generated. Every single time Excel Services goes to that embedded database, we know that that workbook is being used, and we in the management dashboard can tell you what the top 10 workbooks are that people are using. All of that information is being collected. What you do with it is, you know, with great knowledge becomes great responsibility. But that information is being collected. So you're giving up control by allowing end users to do things in SharePoint. We're giving you visibility into their operation, into their usage of the system, that we think is a very cool feature. So just be aware of that. Another feature is the gallery. So the gallery is a Silverlight control that we skin on top of a document library. I'll show you that in a little bit. You can see what that looks like. For end users, they love it. You know, as I said, end users have spent days and days and days developing this workbook to have it look exactly the way they want it to. The notion that they can take that workbook and have thumbnail pictures be rendered of it, I'll show you what it looks like, it's very pretty, end users just love. And the fact that it's easy for them to get to some of the Power Pivot functionality from that same graphical interface, again, users like that. And that's the gallery feature. Workbooks as a data source is kind of an interesting feature. As you know, Excel today can connect to analysis services. And I said that embedded in a Power Pivot workbook is an analysis services database. What would happen if a user could connect to a workbook just as if it was an analysis services database? And that's what that feature is. So a user can create a embedded data source, embedded data that he sees inside this Power Pivot workbook, and they can then make a connection to that data set as from another workbook and use that as a linked data source. They think that they're talking to analysis services, but when the server name comes up, rather than putting in the server name, they put in the URL to the workbook, and behind the scenes, we detect that this is a workbook rather than an analysis services database, and we wire up the plumbing so that that workbook is pulled out of SharePoint and loaded into an analysis services server in their SharePoint farm, and we allow them to connect to that data as if it was an analysis services database. So that gives them reuse of their data in a very, very cool feature, because then they can do a pivot table over top of that data. So that's that particular feature. And we'll talk about link files and data feed libraries in a little bit. So I want to do a quick demo. Again, I just want to touch on the core capabilities of the product. Hopefully you may have seen some of these features. So this is what the gallery looks like. Basically what happens is when a workbook is uploaded into a document library, there are SharePoint events that are raised that the item has been added to the document library. Our Silverlight control, there's a component in SharePoint, recognizes that this document has been added, and we invoke a Silverlight control that then uses an IE browser to take that workbook and load it into Excel Services on the server. And then for each worksheet, we take a thumbnail picture of the workbook as it's been rendered in IE, and we store it back into the document library. So all of these thumbnails have been captured by the system when the document was first loaded into the document library, and now the end user can sit here, and as they move from worksheet to worksheet, the Silverlight control changes the graphics that they're looking at. Not only is the user seeing that that's exactly like the workbook that was on his desktop, and he's seeing pictures like that, but depending on what the information is, there are users that will come to the gallery, and they may never actually open up this document. They may look at that. This could be a dashboard of some kind that's all green. And it's from their point of view, as long as it's all green, they don't got to see the numbers. If it's red, they want to open it and do some additional analysis. But if it's all green, they don't want to do anything. And we actually give them some things that you can do to kind of facilitate that. So this is the default vision, the default view of a gallery. But you can change that view to something else. You can go back to a document library. This is what a standard SharePoint document library looks like. A gallery is just a thin a veneer on top of a document library. This is a document library underneath it. This is what a user would normally see. But I can go in and I have a couple of other options that are available for my views that I can have. We have something called Theater View. And the theater view takes the snapshots for all the documents in the document library and lays them out all across the bottom. And the user can see the workbook. They don't even realize that this is multiple workbooks. It just looks like a one flat space as far as they're concerned. And they can navigate to and from the thumbnails directly here. And they have a little bit more screen real estate. If they want even a bigger screen real estate, they can go into the carousel view. And in the carousel view, we give them each worksheet and each workbook laid out in a single space. So you can see how users may not even open up Excel from this. This may be perfectly adequate for what 90% of what the users want to do. 10% of the users want to do a drill down, and for them, if they just click on the item, it brings it up in Excel services, and now they can do a regular pivot table. They can change the slicers, and they can look at different versions of the data and do additional analysis of the data if they need to. And all of this is being done. And now, under the covers, when the user clicked on this workbook, we look and we see that the embedded database has not been loaded yet. And on demand, we pull that database out and we load that into an analysis services server. So nobody had to preload anything here. We detected based on demand that the data was needed and we loaded it into the SharePoint app server where analysis services is located. So this is a different style than what you typically look at when you see an analysis services. Normally, analysis services, you create a permanent database. Users make connection to it. And as an IT department, I decide whether or not I want to get rid of it or make a change to it or something like that. In this world, end users are doing that all themselves. They haven't called the IT department to do any of this work. They're doing all of this themselves. On the management side, as I said, there was this management dashboard feature. We don't have a separate utility. We are integrated with SharePoint, so you go to Central Admin in SharePoint when you want to administer SharePoint. And Power Pivot for SharePoint is implemented as a SharePoint shared service. So you go to Central Admin. You don't run Management Studio. You don't run Bids. You don't run any of your IT tools, your IT Pro tools. You use SharePoint tools to debug and look at Power Pivot for SharePoint. So here you see that we add to Central Admin a Power Pivot for SharePoint management dashboard. And when I bring that up, these are actually web parts for Excel services that look at the usage information. I haven't processed anything, so you can't. There's no reports to see there. Normally you would see reports, but what you do see is that there are two workbooks that users are routinely using. They are routinely using this state.xlsx, and there's this Power Pivot Management data.xlsx. We actually implement the use this dashboard, the data that you're looking at in the dashboard is implemented as an Excel workbook. We use our own technology to do all of this data collection. So you will actually will see on a heavily loaded system where you're using the management dashboard a lot, you will see the management dashboard as an item that it's monitoring itself, because we're using Power Pivot technology to do the management dashboard under the covers. So the other thing I wanted to show you let's go back to the gallery, go into our default gallery mode. This is the format that I like the most, mostly because of these little icons right up here. And these icons allow you to do additional functionality. So for example, where you had a workbook as a data source, you could go to the workbook that was the data that you wanted to use, and you click on this Excel button, and it launches Excel pointed against that workbook as a data source. There's a new icon in 2012 for Power View, so you can be looking at a workbook and then launch Power View using that workbook as a data source. And we will launch Power View, and then you can do a report against the data that's sitting in that workbook. So we will add icons here as appropriate. And one of the icons that you use here is the automatic data refresh. So here I went to this file, and now I can enable a schedule. And here I can say I want it monthly, the first Sunday of each month. Okay, or I want to do it daily, every day, or every weekday, but not on the weekend. So those are the kinds of options that me, as an IW user, I went to a... this isn't IT that's doing this up. This is the Excel user who uploaded a workbook into a document library or uploaded it into a gallery. He's setting up this schedule for him for when the workbook would be updated. Since the workbook contains data, when the workbook at 2 o'clock in the morning fires, the update is going to happen. We have to know who the Windows user is that's going to reach out and touch the data source. Let's say they were pulling in data from SQL Server and they were using trusted connections. We want to know who the user is. So we give them the capability to enter in a Windows username and password, and we will log in that user before we do the data refresh. So the data refresh is done in the context of that account. The user has many different options. They can give us a username and password, and we store those credentials in Secure Store for them. Or they could use the credentials that were already in the workbook if you were using SQL logins. Or you could already have a Secure Store credentials that were set up for that user because they're using Secure Store for other purposes, like talking to SAP data or BCS or some other kind of facility that may already have the credentials in Secure Store, and you just want the user to be able to reuse it, because they might be using Secure Store to have Excel services go against the relational database directly for a report. So those Secure Store app IDs may already exist, and the user can just enter it. Now, those are the credentials for the entire source. We also allow you to enter in that same information on a data source by data source basis. So you could have one data source that was being used to update your HR data in the workbook, and you could have another data source that was being used for your sales data, and your user has the capability on an individual data source by data source to set up their own schedule and to set up their own Windows credentials. So you could say, I want the HR data from this workbook to be updated weekly, and I want the sales data to be updated monthly. Users are allowed to do that. They define the data sources that go into the workbook. They can set up the data refresh schedule on a data source by data source basis. This, as I said, this is functionality that Excel users just absolutely love because they have no similar kind of collaborative feature in Excel or Excel services today. But we give it to them in Power Pivot. All right. So, this is management. I got to talk about setup. I couldn't stand up here and not talk about setup. So what do you have to do? So there's a lot of moving parts to be able to install your system. First thing is you've got to have your servers. So we listed here the min hardware requirements for SharePoint because SharePoint drives the min requirements, not SQL Server. So yes, SQL Server analysis services will run on a 2 gig or a 4 gig server, but SharePoint won't. So our min hardware requirements are SharePoint. Operating system, so first you've got to get your hardware in place, you're going to need to install your OS. We require a server OS, which means that we don't run on desktop, you can't run on Windows 7, you've got to run on Windows Server 2008 or 2008 R2. So you must have a real server OS. And when you install SharePoint, you need all your SharePoint configs and CUs. I mean, SharePoint 2010 has been around for a while. I guess they're up on CU 8 or 9 now. They have a service pack. So if you want to install and use SQL Server 2012 as your relational database for SharePoint, you must use Service Pack 1 for SharePoint. You can't use the RTM version of SharePoint to be able to use SQL Server 2012. So there is some version dependencies between some of these products as we're now a couple of years down through the development cycle. And that gives you your basic SharePoint environment on your box. And there's two kinds of SharePoint environments on your machine. You can have what's called, what we call a new server, which means that you did a SharePoint installation, but you didn't configure it. All what you did was lay the SharePoint bits down, and when you run the Power Pivot configuration tools, we'll configure the SharePoint farm for you. If it's a single user departmental machine, that's a great solution because we know all the components to turn on, and we can do it for you. If you have an existing farm that you're adding Power Pivot to it, then you do your full SharePoint installation. You get your SharePoint farm up and running, and then you add Power Pivot to it. So you can do either one of the two approaches. If you're on a single machine, the new server, I think, makes a lot of sense because then we can configure it from the ground go for you. But if you have an existing 3-node SharePoint farm and you want to add Power Pivot to it, you can do that. But then you've got to do the full SharePoint installation and then install Power Pivot on top of it. Then you install SQL Server. Now, Power Pivot for SharePoint is a component of SQL Server. Now, this will feel very strange, but this is what you do. You walk up to a SharePoint app server, not where SQL Server is running for your SharePoint farm, because SharePoint needs SQL Server for the relational database. That system was off someplace. I mean, I don't know or care where that is, okay? But you have a SharePoint app server, which is where SharePoint applications run. You walk up to that machine and you run SQL Server install on that machine. And I'll show you the place in SQL Server where you branch off to do a Power Pivot for SharePoint installation. But since Power Pivot for SharePoint is licensed through SQL Server, you have to have a SQL Server license for where you're going to install it. You must have a SQL Server license for the SharePoint app server where you do the installation. And I'll show you in SQL setup where you do that. And then new in 2012 is this new configuration tool. In 2008 R2, the way the setup process worked is you had two options. If you were in a new farm situation, when you installed SQL Server, we configured the SharePoint machine for you right then, right as part of SQL Server setup. And in which case, if we ran into a problem with the SharePoint installation, you could easily end up with a corrupted SharePoint install. And that happened in way, way too many customers. So in 2012, we went to a different approach. In 2012, when you run the SQL Server installation, all's what we do is we lay the bits down. We lay the instances down, we configure the instances that are needed for SQL Server, but we don't do any of the SharePoint work. All of the SharePoint work is done in this configuration tool. So after you're all done, then you run the configuration tool, and I'll show you what that looks like. Which means that you can run the configuration tool even after you've done your SharePoint installation. And we will do many of the things that in 2008 R2, we published this huge checklist, and we said, if you're installing PowerPivot in a shared existing farm configuration, we didn't want to touch your SharePoint farm. So what we did was we published this list that had about 24, 25 items in it. And we said, if you haven't already turned on Secure Store, go in and turn on Secure Store and generate a master key. And we documented those steps. And then we said, and you create a PowerPivot service application, and we told you how to do that through the UI. But we didn't do it for you automatically, except if you said it was a dedicated new server. If it was an existing server, we didn't do any of that for you. You had to do it by hand. In 2012, we now have that done for you in the configuration tool. And you can either run the configuration tool and have us do it for you, or you can run the configuration tool and get the PowerShell scripts that we would run for you, and then you could execute the PowerShell scripts by yourself if you wanted to. So we give you a lot more different options in 2012. So there's that additional step in 2012, and we've got a lot of real positive feedback that's a much nicer way of installing PowerPivot for SharePoint. So I have recorded here something I am not going to do for you. I'm going to stop it. Please stop it. Stop. Well, as you can see, as it is running, you can get the deck and look at it and do it yourself if you want to. I don't think there's a lot of value in this, but this is what it looks like when you do a SharePoint installation and then what you do a SQL Server installation. And you can look at that to your heart's content. What I want to do is now look at what the deltas are. Where are the things that you're going to have to focus more strongly as a SQL Server and a SharePoint administrator? The first thing is, where do you get the bits that we just talked about? How do you get them on your box? The first thing is to install SharePoint. SharePoint has something called the prereq installer, which will bring all the right patches up to date, all the different dependent components. There's about 8 or 10 different components that SharePoint needs, and the prereq installer will go out and bring those in for you. If you want to, if you only have a single server, it'll go out on the internet and it'll download the utilities for you. But if you're going to be doing a lot of PowerPivot installations, or if you're going to install PowerPivot on your own dedicated machine that doesn't have internet access, do those systems exist anymore that don't have internet access? If you have those that don't have internet access, you can build a version of the prereq installer that you copy the bits down by hand. Put them in a particular folder, and you can generate a file called the prereq installer.arguments.txt file that tells the prereq installer where the distributions are, and then you can do that by hand. I do a lot of SharePoint installations, and this is what I do. I don't do it each at a time. I generate a folder, and I just go out and do it. If you do a lot of installations, you'll want to do that. The same thing with Slipstream. Both SharePoint and SQL Server have slipstream functionality that allow you to take the RTM version and add service packs and add CUs to the distribution so that you don't have to do that by hand. Now, in SQL Server, there's an actual sequence of steps that you have to go through to be able to generate a slipstream image. In SharePoint, they give you a folder that if the CU files were in this folder, then SharePoint automatically invokes them. So with SharePoint, you just have to copy files into folders. Now, sometimes they're big. I think the latest CU9 is like over a gig to be able to copy down all the patched images that are in CU9. But if you do it, you just have to drop it into a folder, and you've generated the slipstream version. In addition to SQL Server, everything that you do through SQL Server setup can also be have an unattended installation. So it is perfectly reasonable to generate an unattended installation of SQL Server, generate the slipstreams for all the SharePoint installations, take Arc configuration tool, generate PowerShell scripts, and have one complete, totally lights out, automated script that will take a bare bones machine with just an OS on it and install everything up to snuff. And for example, in the Microsoft IT department, that's what we use, was all of our SharePoint farms have to be generated from scripts like that, and that's what we do. So what's the magic? Where, when you're running SQL Server setup, do you kind of make the left turn that says this is a different kind of installation? And there's this new page called a setup role that is defined. This exists in 2008 R2. I don't know if you guys have ran into it or not. It definitely is there with 2008. Normally, to install SQL Server, the relational product and analysis services and RS in native mode and all of those normal installations, the default is to have the top radio button be selected. Okay? And the first top radio button says that this is a feature installation, just install the relational database. This other item here where you check off that says you want a power pivot for SharePoint, that's the place where the left-hand turn is made. And this is where we say, oh, this is installing the Power Pivot for SharePoint. I'm running on an app server. At this point in time, the assumption is that you're running on a SharePoint app server, and we will lay down SharePoint features, solutions. We'll create timer jobs against files that are laid on the machine. We assume that at that point in time, if you check that box, that we assume that you're on an app server, and we lay down the files as if you were on an app server. And we will automatically lay down an analysis services image for you, because analysis services in Power Pivot mode is what's being used behind the scenes. And if you check off that checkbox there that says that you also want a relational database, in one box we will also install a relational instance on the app server, believing that you're going to make this a single machine farm. So if you did, this is the equivalent of a new server. It says, I've ran the SharePoint installation. I didn't configure SharePoint. I just laid the bits down. I'm running SQL Server setup. Well, I need a relational engine. I've got to have a relational engine. Normally, in SharePoint, they would have you go away and install SQL Server setup somewhere. This is the option that you would use if you want to use, if you want to generate SQL Server for the SharePoint farm. And when you run the configuration utility, the configuration tool, if you checked off that you wanted a SQL Server relational database engine as part of the Power Pivot installation, we will configure the SharePoint farm to use that relational engine for our SharePoint purposes. Is everybody comfortable with that? But well, first of all, does everybody realize that SharePoint looks like it's a bunch of folders? But it doesn't create any folders. Everything in SharePoint is actually blobs in a SQL Server database. You think that in SharePoint you're uploading files to a file share somewhere or to a folder. That's just an illusion that SharePoint creates for you. In reality, everything is stored in a relational database as blobs. You install, right, so you install Power Pivot for SharePoint where you want the Power Pivot services to be provided by that machine. If you're configuring that app server to only use Power Pivot or to use Power Pivot in Excel services but not others, then you would install Power Pivot there. If you have another app server that's only being used by Excel services or only being used as an index server, then or as a search crawler or something like that, then you do not need to install Power Pivot over there. When we talk about hardware architectures, I'll talk about where you would want to do that, but you don't have to. Okay. So I've talked about this configuration tool. What does it actually look like? When you're done with SQL Server setup, it just finishes, and you just sit there and go, well, what do I do next? Well, if you hit the Start button, you would see that we added on the desktop the configuration tool. So you go here, and you run the configuration tool. The first thing the configuration tool says is, it kind of looks and says, is SharePoint been configured already? If it's SharePoint's been configured already, you have to tell it whether or not you want to remove things from the farm or whatever. This screenshot I took here, I had never installed SharePoint on the server yet, so the only option it gives me is to configure SharePoint. And then it goes away. And it looks at my SharePoint and it says, oh, look, the triangle, yellow triangles mean that there's some error, some information is needed. And so I've got to fill out the information on the right-hand side of the screen. That's exactly the same information that you did fill out in 2008 R2 as part of SQL Server setup. So we're installing a SharePoint form, so I need the SharePoint passphrase. I need to know what the service account is that you want to run SharePoint under. In Central Admin, I need a port number to be able to generate for Central Admin. So those are all SharePoint information because I need to configure the SharePoint farm. And so I fill out that information, and then I hit Validate. Then the system goes away and says, oh, okay, you've given me valid accounts. This looks like this can be used to configure SharePoint. You click on OK and run. And then we go out and we configure the SharePoint farm. As you can see, this long list of things that have to be done have the green flag next to them. And the system just starts working its way down through each one of those steps. As it finishes it, it puts a check mark next to it. If it detected an error, it'll put an X next to it. If it's a fatal error, it'll stop there, and you'll be, you know, a portion of the way through. Let's say you were running on a very slow server, and we deployed the SharePoint solution, and the solution has to run in 5 minutes. That's a SharePoint limitation that the timer job has to run in 5 minutes. So what happens if it times out and we're unable to do the feature installation? That could be just because you're running on a slow server. So you may have to run this configuration tool a couple times to have your installation run, but we've detected you've already configured the SharePoint farm. That's already checked off. So you can rerun this, wizard over and over and over again, and we will detect what's been properly configured and what hasn't been configured and set up this list of activities that has to run. And then when it's all done, you got all check marks down the line, and everything is all done. If you want to, you can click over onto the script tab, and here are all the PowerShell scripts that we're going to run. Everything that this tool runs is PowerShell driven. We don't do anything from the UI or anything that isn't PowerShell driven. So it's using PowerShell to look at the SharePoint configuration, and it's using PowerShell to configure, and it's using PowerShell to add the components and generate the SharePoint master keys and all the things that we do with SharePoint. And here are the scripts. So if you want to automate them, you just copy and paste them out of here, and you run them in your own scripts if you want to. And we also generate the output tab. As we run each one of the PowerShell scripts, we generate a running log here with timestamps. So you'll see exactly what ran and what the output was that PowerShell gave back to us. So as an IT department, this is a very cool tool. And you can, if later on something breaks in your system, later on some new SharePoint administrator walks up and deletes the Secure Store service application, and you go, all of a sudden Power Pivot stops working, and you start getting ready all these error messages about unable to look up credentials, and your users are screaming. What do you do? You go back and you run the configuration tool. We detect that the PowerShell, that the Secure Store master key was deleted, or that there's no service application, and we'll either do it for you directly, or we'll give you the PowerShell script to run, because we compare what environment we have to have against what's currently running on the system. And what we're doing here is generating the delta for you. That's the whole purpose of this tool. Now, it just so happens in the very beginning, you don't have anything done. So this whole list includes green flags and tests and steps that have to happen for the whole farm. But that doesn't have to be. Later on, you can just rerun it, and it'll just detect what the deltas are. Okay? So we really think that that's a very, very useful tool. So as I said, what's happening here is you've running SQL Server Setup. SQL Server Setup just lays the files down and installs any instances that may be required. An analysis services instance is required on the SharePoint app server. So SQL Server Setup does it on the machine where you're running SQL Server Setup. As a minimum, that will happen. It may also install a relational engine if you checked off that you wanted a relational engine. And then you run the configuration tool, and all of the other SharePoint activities happen out of the configuration tool. The deployment of the solution, the turning on of the features within the web application, all of that stuff is done via PowerShell by the configuration tool in its environment, not necessarily in SQL Server Setup. Okay? So you have various different options around how you generated the system. You can generate the SharePoint or the PowerShell scripts. That's what the left-hand side is talking about here. We give you PowerShell commandlets, which allow you to manipulate PowerPivot functionality, like creating our service application and things like that. So we will give you, as part of our installation, a PowerShell commandlet DLL that is registered with PowerShell for about 24 different commandlets that we need to be able to configure us appropriately, and that information is there. And you get that from the scripting tab. So these are the various different things that have to happen. So first time, you have to deploy a solution. The bottom yellow says that there's a core solution that has to be deployed out on your farm. The way that happens in SharePoint is that there's a timer job that's running on every machine in the SharePoint farm. And it's constantly looking at a blob storage that's kept in the config database. And when any app server wants to deploy a solution through the whole farm, there's a PowerShell command that's run, and they take that DLL and they insert it into a blob. And then there's a timer job running on all the machines that pull that blob out, generate it into a flat file, and then go to the GAC and register it in the GAC and then run it. And that's that 5-minute time interval that you have throughout your whole SharePoint farm. So that's the first thing. That's kind of like the core fundamentals. Then within every app, web app, you have to turn on the PowerPivot features. So let me show you that. So here I'll go to Central Admin. In Central Admin, you can see that you have certain web applications that have to be generated. So if I generated a new web application here, how do I get PowerPivot turned on for that web application? I'm a site collection administrator, so I go to that site collection. So let me go there. I now go to my root site collection. I look at my site settings. And if I am a site administrator, I get this list of options down here. And one of the options is site collection features. And here are the Power Pivot features. So remember I said, you know, I've already talked about one feature already, a gallery. A gallery is just a feature that extends a document library. Well, you have to turn that on. One web application might have that enabled, another application might not. By default, when you run the configuration tool, we go out and we enumerate all of the web applications and turn Power Pivot on all the web applications. But later on, you may want to turn it off. You may add one, and then all of a sudden, the gallery doesn't appear, and other document, like the data feed library, doesn't appear. All these Power Pivot capabilities, there's no managed data refresh option. That doesn't appear in the context menu of the document library. You wonder, well, why doesn't that exist? Well, it doesn't exist because you didn't turn it on. And that's an example of this particular, the green line, where you've got to deploy the solution or turn on the features within the web application. Then you have to go to the features within the various site collections, which is what I just showed you, and turning on the features in the site collections. To make all of this stuff appear and work. Which we just did that. Okay.
Can I raise one question?
Sure.
So one of the core problems in SQL Server 2008 was that Power Pivot didn't support claims creation authentication. Yeah? We thought that limitation is now disappearing with SQL 2012, yeah? But that indicates that it's still running only with classic mode. Yeah? Yeah, which is contradictory to the guidance that Microsoft gives to SharePoint, yeah? Because the clear recommendation is to set up SharePoint applications in claims mode. Yeah?
Okay. We are certainly aware of that. We're certainly aware of that. So there's a couple of things to distinguish. First is that every application in SharePoint 2010 is claims aware. Power Pivot is claims aware. It's just that we require Windows users. So you must be in a you must have valid Windows users to be able to run a Power Pivot application. Okay. When you have and a web application can be in two different modes, classic and a claims enabled web application. What the claims enabled web application means is that the only place where you can go into claims is on the web front end. That's the way the SharePoint implemented that. And for a standard SharePoint installation, and for 99% of all SharePoint applications that run on the web front end, that's a true statement. Unfortunately, not all applications run like that. There are some applications that require you to be in Windows on app servers. And for that, SharePoint does not have a solution except classic mode web apps. So One of the things that we ran into is we require that scheduled data refresh does a login on the app server, and to be able to do that, you can't do that with a claims only web app. So the only answer is to be classic, not because we wanted to, it's because the SharePoint architecture, that's the only way they will support it.
No.
it may be the only Microsoft. No, it's not the only. Thank you. Yes. It's a very detailed discussion, believe me. It's something we have gone around and around with the SharePoint team for months and months and months. And the answer is we only support a classic web application. We support Windows claims only, and you must run it in a classic web app. You can take a claims aware application. We are a claims. If you are with, let's have a separate discussion on that. Okay, believe me, it's a very detailed topic. All right, I think we've talked about most of these things because we've talked about the CUs being updated and making sure that the right versions of the system is installed. There is a very interesting discussion around the way which you do upgrade. So one of the things you have to be very careful of in the PowerPivot world is that the PowerPivot workbooks that you get may come from either 2008 R2 or they could be SQL 2000 or 2012. So you have to install client libraries like OLEDB providers and ADOMD.NET and all of the different client libraries may need to be installed. Both versions may need to be installed on the various machines. So before you run upgrade and update any of your servers, you need to make sure that all of the DLLs that are needed for both the current versions that you're running and any upgraded versions that you're doing run on the same machine. So there are steps that you have to go through before you do the update process. And you'll be looking at this and saying, well, why am I installing this older software on this machine that may never be used? And the reason is because you may have older workbooks that need to get installed on those machines too, and they need the older versions of the client libraries. So we have very detailed steps about the way which you do upgrade. And the same thing with patching, too. So the basic sequence is that you patch and upgrade machine to machine to machine to machine. SharePoint and PowerPivot does not allow you to support running multiple patch levels all on the same hardware. So you cannot be running some servers on 2008 R2, some app servers in a farm on 2008 R2, and some servers on 2012. Neither SharePoint nor we support that. So you have to, if you're going to upgrade, you must upgrade, go to a server, and then go to another app server, and go to another app server, and do all your upgrades. You can't do a partial upgrade and bring your farm up and service your users and have the system automatically balance the users to the proper machines and the proper versions that you're expecting. Neither SharePoint nor PowerPivot supports that. But we do support multiple different configurations. And this gets back to your installation question that I want to touch briefly on. So when you're configuring, when you're working with SharePoint, there are some various different configurations to look at. You probably right now are only thinking of the one to the left and the one to the right, depending on what your configuration is. The one to the left says that I'm building a departmental machine or I'm just starting out with PowerPivot. I either don't have SharePoint or I have SharePoint, but I want to leave that alone. That's where my enterprise SharePoint farm is running. I don't yet want to install PowerPivot out there. I want to install it in a sandbox kind of environment where you want to take a particular server, bring up SharePoint, and bring up PowerPivot all on just a single box. And that's what the left-hand box describes. The right-hand box is I've got a 7-machine SharePoint farm, and one machine is doing one thing and another machine is doing another, and it's a very complicated and dedicated server environment. Okay? People think that there's either one or the other, when in reality there's a spectrum of applications, and I want to kind of walk you through what would happen here. How could I start off with a single machine here and ultimately end up with a more dedicated and much larger farm a little bit later on? So let's look at these two different things. So the first thing you would do is separate. If you started on the left-hand side, what's the first thing that you should do? The first thing you should do is look at getting your relational database off of that single machine and onto its own box. SharePoint recommendation number one is to never run SQL Server relational database and SharePoint on the same machine. They really want you to take SQL Server and run it off onto its own machine because it so heavily uses SQL Server. And sometimes you can conflict if you try to run them on the same machine. Now, there's two different ways that you can do that. One, you could take your single box and then go into the SQL Server client libraries and create an alias that says, hey, SQL Server, you think you're on one machine, but I want you to take that database and I want you to move it over there and create an alias. In which case, SharePoint thinks that it's talking to the single box, but every single time it talks to the relational database points it someplace else. So that's the first thing you could do, and that takes you about 5 minutes to make that happen. Also, what you do is you take a SQL Server backup of your relational image on the single machine, you restore that over onto another machine, and then you run the SQL Server client libraries to create an alias, and you point that instance over to the instance that you just copied the databases. You bring SharePoint up, and everything just works. 5 minutes max. And now you've got two different machines. The problem with that is that you could then go to a SharePoint second and a third and a fourth machine on the SharePoint side, but you have to reconfigure the client libraries on each one of those to point to that SQL Server instance that you created. So normally what I recommend is to start off in that environment where you create an alias. And once you've got the alias up and running, then run the SharePoint PowerShell scripts that have you migrate the SQL Server from what it thinks is the single box over to the dedicated machine. And once you run the SharePoint scripts to move all of the config and content databases over to your other dedicated machine, then anybody who joins that SharePoint farm automatically knows about where the relational databases are located. And you don't have to configure SharePoint. You just add another machine, add another machine, add another machine. Okay? So that's the first box that actually has two configurations, one with aliases and one without. So now you've gotten a little bit bigger. Now you're starting to use more and more app servers. You're using SharePoint for more and more features. It's grown beyond just PowerPivot. You need extra resources. So how do you do it? There's two basic approaches. One that I call the homogeneous approach that says that you're going to take on every SharePoint app server, you're going to run all the services. You turn on every service on every app server. If you need another machine, you bring it in, you plug it into the farm. Need another machine, you bring it in and you plug it in on the farm. And all the SharePoint facilities, including PowerPivot, have load balancers that will load balance between app servers. It's part of basic SharePoint, in which case every app server looks like every other app server, and you get high availability, you get dynamic load balancing, you get everything out of your SharePoint farm. You need more capacity, you go and get another machine. You need less capacity, you take one of the machines out of the farm. Very easy to grow and shrink your SharePoint farm. I would do that if you had between 2 and 5, maybe 7 servers in your SharePoint farm. It's very easy to do. It might be costly because then you have to license PowerPivot for every single machine, which gets back to your question, okay? But it's a very easy way to scale out your SharePoint architecture. The ultimate approach is to go away and do a study that says what are the resources consumed by every app server and every service application and figure out which ones play well together. So, for example, search is very CPU intensive, But a search crawler doesn't care about memory. Search and Power Pivot could exist on the same machine without any problems at all. Excel services can be memory intensive. Power Pivot is very memory intensive. Would I want to put them on the same machine? I don't know. It depends on how many people, what kind of Excel services load I have on the system. Okay? So that's where you've got to go away and do it. And SharePoint people are very comfortable with that because that's what they do today. When they get to the scale of 10, 15, Microsoft, our large SharePoint farm has got 23, 24 servers in it. You know, if you're at that scale, you know in gory detail exactly what kind of resources are consumed by what service applications. In which case, Power Pivot is just another service application that consumes resources differently, and you would put it in the mix in the right place, and then you would have to install it on each app server where you would want those services provided. You wouldn't have to install it on all 24. You would install it on just the app services where you believe that there's no conflict in resource consumption. Okay? So there's a continuum here, and you can start on the left-hand side and grow your SharePoint farm accordingly, based on where you think you need to go. Don't feel like you always have to be on the left or you always have to be on the right. And this picture just basically shows that there are these various different migration techniques that you can do and what scale-out technique that you're using. You'll notice that on the purple one, you are load balancing all of your WFEs and your app servers. In this configuration, with a homogeneous environment, you turn on all services on every machine, app servers and web front ends on all machines. And there's no differentiating between one machine and another. It's just that a machine generates a load. And you allow the system to load balance and configure the farm properly, as it would normally do. Okay. I'm going to do a switch, because I really want to show you those features. So we're going to quickly look at another web application, because I want to give you a flavor for what it means to administer Power Pivot in this world. So there are two services that are installed in Power Pivot when you install Power Pivot. The first is a web application. This is the Power Pivot web application. And it has various different parameters that you can configure and set up. So we'll work our way through these, and then I want to talk about the other kind of application, which is the analysis services instance that's installed, and the way which you could configure its properties. So this is the web application. Let's look at the kinds of features that are here. The first one is the allocation method. Remember I said that Power Pivot, like any SharePoint application, has its own load balancing algorithm. If you install Power Pivot on three different machines, we load balance between those, and we give you two algorithms. A round robin, which says that once we create a database on one server, you create another one, we'll go to the next server. We go to the next server, and then we go back again. And we just create, we go down the line, and then we cycle back. And we go down the line, and we cycle back. That's round robin. That's very easy to use, and it doesn't consume a lot of resources. You're not jumping all around. You're just kind of consuming the farm on a pretty regular basis. The other one is the health-based allocation. In a health-based allocation, what happens is we look at the analysis services instance, and we look at all the analysis services instances, and we say, where's the most amount of memory available? And if all of the memory is being used, which are the least recently used databases that we can unload from memory? Nobody is really using them right now, so let's unload them. Maybe users won't need them right away, and we can consume those resources by somebody else. And that's the health-based allocation. So we have a built-in health-based allocation algorithm that will spread the load out across your SharePoint farm between all of the different app servers. In addition to that, we look at the consumptions that are being done by the Power Pivot workbooks. So one of the things that can happen is, remember I said end users configure their own data refresh. Well, what happens when this is a really hot workbook this week and users are using it and looking at it a lot? This happens a lot with end users. And then the next fire drill comes along and they forget it. And they go away and do something else. Well, every day this update is happening. Nobody's looking at it, but it's still consuming resources on your farm. This is an end user driven system. What? How does the system realize that these resources are not being consumed anymore? And we give you these two features. One is to disable the automatic refresh on consecutive failures. If the refresh comes up, if it fails, the default is 10 times. If it fails for 10 times in a row, we will disable the schedule so it won't happen anymore. So let's say somebody goes away on vacation, and while they're away on vacation, the database moves someplace else, and that workbook fails and fails and fails and fails and fails. After the 10th failure, 10th consecutive failure, we just go into the workbook and we disable the data refresh. We don't change it, we just disable it so that it won't run anymore. And an end user has to go back and enable it. That way it's not consuming resources on your machine. If you don't like this, you want to make it 0, it'll never be disabled. If you make it 20, we'll wait 20 time intervals. You decide what you want to do for your farm based on your resources. The other failure mode is what happens if it is being successfully refreshed, but nobody looks at it. We have another setting that says that if the workbook has been refreshed n number of times and nobody has actually invoked it and actually looked at it, we'll disable the schedule. What happens when the work group goes on to another project and this workbook is being updated every day? It's just nobody's looking at it. And it's updating and it's updating and it's consuming resources on your farm. And nobody's, because they didn't think to go back and look at it. After 10 times of being refreshed, if nobody still looks at it, then we disable the schedule. We don't delete it, we just disable it. And a user has to go in and enable it. If you don't like this, if you want to always leave it enabled, make it 0. If you want to change it to be 20, you can change it to be whatever you want. The default is 10. What do we do if workbooks are being used by users and then they stop using it? How long do we consume resources for workbooks that are not being used? In 2008 R2, we had two hard limits. One was after 2 days, if the workbook was not being used, we will unload it from memory. We'll leave it on the app server, but we won't load it in memory. After 5 more days, we'll delete it from the app server, and if the user comes back to it, we've got to go all the way back to the content database and reload it. Okay? In 2012, we give you those parameters, and you can change them if you want to. In 2008 R2, they were hard-coded into the system. And in 2012, that's what these two settings are here. 2 days, 48 hours, and 120 hours, which is the 5 days. So you can set that to be whatever you want. Let's go to the service application. So let's go to analysis services itself. Now, normally you think of as analysis services as running Management Studio, right? I mean, that's what you use as an analysis services user. Not in this world. In this world, you run Central Admin. You go down to analysis services. And here are the properties that you can set for analysis services. You can say, this app server can only be used for queries. It can't be used for data refresh. That's what it looks like if you disable that. If you want to, you can say, no, this machine is dedicated to just doing data refresh, not answering queries at all. Or you can do the default, which is to say it can be used by either queries or for data refresh. So you can specialize app servers for particular roles in your SharePoint farm. Not only that, but if it is using data refresh, you can say how many data refresh jobs at the same time can it run. So you want to limit, because it's being used for both queries and data refresh, you may want to say only two people can be doing data refresh at a time on my app server. This is very similar to Max Parallel out of Analysis Services, where you can say how many processing jobs are running at a time. Okay? Remember I said that after 2 days, we will unload the workbook from memory, but we will leave it on disk. What we do is we take a backup of the database and we leave it in the backup folder. So if a user comes in, we don't have to go to the content database. We've already got it, and we just have to attach the database. So we actually do a detach. We don't actually do a backup. The backup image is there, but we just do a detach. So later on, also we have to do is the attach to bring the database back. How long do we? What happens if more and more users start using the system and they fill up the hard disk on the app server? You have large workbooks, 100 of them, 200, 5 of them, 1,000 of them, and you overflow the hard drive. In 2008 R2, if you fill up the disk, you fill up the disk. Sorry about that, guys. You just get out of disk. You get out of disk. You run out of disk space errors. That's it. In 2012, what happens is if you exceed the amount of memory, the amount of disk space that you set here, we'll go back and we'll start deleting those detached images. And you tell us how far back you want to delete, and then the disk can start to be filled back up again. Again, the user doesn't see this. The only impact it is to the user is if their database is deleted, it may mean that they have to go back to the content database and reload the data. Remember, in PowerPivot for SharePoint, the master copy of the data is always in the workbook, is in the content database. The app server could get blown away. You could delete the data folder. It doesn't make any difference. The permanent copy of the database is in the workbook. We could always go back to the workbook and reload it from the content database. So it's a different way of looking at it from analysis services. Normal analysis services, if you had a production database, you'd take backups of it. You'd work with it. You know, I mean, what is this? In the PowerPivot world, everything is in the workbook. So you take a backup, but what are you backing up? You back up the content database. You don't back up your AS servers. Your AS servers are just there for performance reasons. They're not there for permanence. Permanence is the workbook that's sitting in the content library. So it's a different way of looking at things.
Where is the cache stored?
Excuse me?
Where is the cache stored?
It's regular analysis services instance. So we install by default on the C drive, I believe, but you can put it wherever you want. With regular analysis service, you take Management Studio, you connect to it, you move it the data folder wherever you want. Okay. With that, I think I'm going to finish because I think that's the real core stuff that I want to talk about. Thank you very much. You're more than welcome to look at the presentation, look at the rest of the stuff. It was mostly timer jobs and stuff, SharePoint stuff you guys didn't want to know about anyway. Okay, thank you.